Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/redcircle.
How do people feel about getting Big Fitness Energy at Planet Fitness for $15 a month?
They feel as thrilled as a kid the first summer they're tall enough to ride the roller coaster.
That's right. When you join Planet Fitness right now, you get access to tons of equipment and free fitness training in a clean and spacious club. Don't wait. Join the judgment-free zone today for that all-day energy. Download the free Planet Fitness app and join today for $15 a month.
Hurry. Deal ends September 12th. Join today for $15 a month.
See Home Club for details.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Slash Film Daily. Today is Friday, May 31st, 2024. On today's episode of the show, we're going to be talking about the new horror film In a Violent Nature, and we're going to present an interview with that movie's writer-director, Chris Nash. My name is Ben Pearson. I am an editor at slashfilm.com, and I'm joined on today's episode by Slash Film editor BJ Colangelo.
Hi.
And Slash Film editor and chief film critic, Chris Evangelista.
Hello.
All right, so let's get into it. Let's do some spoiler-free thoughts about this movie, which is streaming on Shudder right now as people are listening to this. So
it's actually not streaming on Shudder right now.
On Friday?
It's coming to theaters on Friday. They haven't announced the Shudder date yet.
Ah, okay. Yes, thank you for the correction there. Excellent. So yes, check your local listings to potentially see it in theaters around you. It will be coming to Shudder sometime in the immediate future.
I'm guessing
future.
June. It's usually like a month after it hits theaters. I'm guessing June will probably
okay. come out. Cool. All right. So I actually know what BJ thought about this movie because she wrote the review for slashfilm.com, which I have linked to in the show notes. So Chris, I'm curious what you made of In a Violent Nature.
I loved it. Right now it's in my top five of the year. It's at number four, I want to say. I don't have the list in front of me. And this really, really impressed me. It's got this sort of hypnotic quality to it that I also know is going to turn some people off because it's a slasher movie from the slasher's point of view. And that's not to say like the whole movie is like the camera pointing out from him. Like, you know, hardcore Henry or something like that, but it's almost following the slasher over his shoulder as he stalks around the woods. So I read an interview with the director where he compared it to Gus Van Sant films like Elephant and Jerry. And if you've seen those films, it's kind of like Friday the 13th meets Elephant, which is not going to appeal to everybody. Some people are going to be very tested by how methodical this movie is, how it plods along almost literally. It follows this guy walking around the woods for long stretches, and there's no music. It's just the sounds of nature, and you know, he'll be strolling through the woods silently, he'll come across people, he'll violently kill them, and that happens over and over again. And while I know this is not going to work for a lot of people, and some people are going to be like, why the hell is this movie so slow, it really worked for me. Just the way it unfolds in this sort of, like I said, hypnotic already, but I'm gonna say it again, it's this hypnotic sort of way where the sounds of nature sort of lull you in, and these quiet moments are punctuated by these bursts of brutal inventive violence. And I don't know, it just really impressed me. I really dug it, and I can't wait to watch it again. I'm gonna watch it again when it hits Shudder.
BJ, before I throw it to you, I just wanted to address something Chris said there. I think the lack of score in this movie really helps because it makes the kills feel almost clinical, like the silence and the way that we just kind of linger on the sound design of people dying is a much different experience than it would be if there was some, you know, amazing synth track going on or something underneath these moments. So I think that was a really, really effective choice on the filmmaker's part. BJ, what did you think about this one?
Yeah, I really dug this movie. I definitely have like some small nitpicks in the sense that I feel like I would be so much more on board with this movie if I have never played any of the video games that are like, you get to be Jason Voorhees and kill people because it follows like nearly an identical like POV. So then that kind of sucks away a little bit of the originality for me. But I think the pacing is so good. I think the kills are so inventive. And the thing that I really love, though, is by changing the perspective of who we're following in a slasher movie, we get a really good look at what pathetic worms we all are as humans, especially when we're trying to survive. Like, just how pathetic we all look trying to run away from safety, whereas in a regular slasher movie, it's very intense and the music is very powerful and it makes your heart race and you want to watch them survive. But when you're watching it from the other side, it's like, oh, we suck. We look like sniveling little idiots.
Yeah, that's a great point. I did not think about that. But yeah, especially there's one moment that I guess we're still in the spoiler-free section, but somebody dies in a way that that is, yeah, almost humorous because of how sort of embarrassing they look as they're trying to scramble away. So I thought this was a fascinating movie. I didn't outright love it, but I'm glad that I saw it. And I think part of the reason that I'm not like full on head over heels for it is because I kind of wish the filmmakers would have been able to commit to their premise even more than they actually did, because even though the movie is told primarily from this killer, the character's name is Johnny, from this killer's perspective, there are several moments where it breaks away from that idea and follows these other characters for a while, which kind of feels like it defeats the purpose of the exercise a little bit. And I was wondering what you all felt about that decision.
I don't disagree. I do agree that it kind of like cheats, especially like the last like 10-15 minutes, but I don't know, it didn't bother me that much because I felt like it only enhanced the movie in a way by cutting away. I do think, I guess when we get to the spoiler talk, I'm very curious to hear what everyone thinks about the ending, because I feel like the ending is going to be the most polarizing thing of this whole movie. But I should also add, I watched this movie on a ton of edibles, which made the movie really good. So, I have to rewatch it again, not on edibles, because I'm worried that like that made the movie better than I thought it was. But watching it on edibles made the movie like even better. Like the sounds were enhanced and the kills were enhanced, and I was like, this is like an amazing movie experience. So I really recommend seeing a violent nature on edibles. Let me add that.
That's funny, because that's the opposite of what BJ recommends in her review. She's talking about, you know, how great it would be to see with a crowd. And she was, I think, I don't want to put words in your mouth, BJ, but I think I remember you saying something like you're worried about people maybe losing their attention span or something, right?
Oh, I'm so worried about it. I'm having the same worries about this when people watch it on Shudder as I did with Killers of the Flower Moon, where there is such intentional pacing in this. And if you have the ability to like get up and walk around and get something from your fridge or look at your phone, I feel like people are not gonna let like give themselves over to watching this guy just walk around through the woods for like 4 minutes, and people are gonna be like, I hate this is stupid. So I'm very worried about that, because seeing it in a theater was really fantastic and hearing people lose their shit around me was great. But I will say I was in between two people with very different feelings, because the person on my left side was like, this is my favorite horror movie of the year, and the person on my right was like, this is a walking simulator, I don't care. And I was like, sick, the duality of man.
All right, well, let's get into some spoilers. Okay, so final spoiler warning, if you've not seen this movie yet and you want to check it out, I'm giving you just a couple more seconds to, you know, dive over and press pause or whatever. Okay, full-on spoiler territory. I mean, you guys talked about the inventiveness of the kills. I've never seen anything like the moment where he pulls that yoga girl's head through her own stomach. I mean, that you guys are much more into the horror realm than I am. Like, BJ, have you ever seen anything like that?
I have been waiting for someone to match the energy of the Final Destination 5 gymnastics kill, and someone has finally done it, and I'm so happy about it.
Oh man, I was talking to my wife about it. She did not watch this movie with me, but I was describing that moment, and I was like, it's among the like, I guess, goriest kills I could ever think of that I've ever seen. I was thinking of, there's a moment in Bone Tomahawk where a character gets bisected vertically that will just haunt my dreams forever. And I was like, this is kind of up there with that. And she was like, oh my God. So Chris, have you ever seen anything like that?
No, I don't want to say all the kills, but the majority of the kills in this movie are really inventive. Like that yoga kill is obviously the one everyone's going to talk about. I was really impressed with the log splitter kill, because it's so like comically slow, just watching him like First, he tests it out. Johnny tests it out and cuts a log. Then he cuts the ranger's arm off. And then he cuts his head off. And it's like, it just keeps going. And like,
yeah.
It's like, I was like, again, this could be the edibles, but I just started like laughing hysterically by the time like that scene ends. Because it goes on. It feels like it's got to go on for like 5 minutes. That's what it felt like.
Our theater did the same thing. Like, it started out like, whoa, gross. And then like a minute and a half in, everyone's like, wait, this is incredible. And everyone's cracking up. So
yeah,
like, I don't know if it was the edibles. I think it might be the movie.
Yeah.
That specific kill, like, that's so good on paper, but the execution for me was so deliberate and so slow, and there was no reaction from the victim that it was almost like an interrogation room light was suddenly put in my face and I was being asked by the director, like, what's wrong? You wanted him to scream, you sick freak, or something? Like, it made me like question the entire relationship between viewers and horror movies, and like why we watch these movies in the first place. Did anybody else have that feeling at any point in this movie?
This is the thing I'm so obsessed with this movie, is because I talk about it a little bit in the interview with Chris Nash, is that like, in the original days of slashers, the idea was like, scare people, like you should be scared of the slasher. And then as franchises went on, it became like, I don't give a flying shit about any of these teenagers. I want to see Jason Voorhees kill somebody in a sleeping bag. And that became the focus. And this movie is doing both. It's like, this is a very traditional sort of slasher, but because the perspective has changed, it's making us kind of think about, oh, how's he going to kill him when he gets there? I wonder what's going to happen when he gets there. And that's very fun and exciting to me. But I kept thinking about all of these like huge reveals in slasher movies that I love. Like I think about in Sleepaway Camp, where they come across the bodies of all the children just hacked to bits in sleeping bags. And it's like a 1 second reveal of like, oh no. But then you have to think about how long did it take Angela to do that? To just hack up a bunch of children in sleeping bags. There's no way that took a short amount of time. So getting to see a slasher actually do that with the log of like, yeah, that big reveal that you see for 5 seconds in another slasher movie is intense, but he put in time and work into doing that.
Yeah. I also think Rye Barrett, as the actor who plays Johnny, does a really good job of making Johnny sympathetic. Like, part of it is also because we spend the whole movie with Johnny, so we can't help but like attach ourselves to him. But he plays, like, even when he's, like, committing these really gruesome, violent, like, you sort of have sympathy for Johnny. Like, there's that little moment where he finds the keychains. Yeah, and he's playing with the toy car. And I was like, that's such a cool little moment that makes you, like, sort of puts you in Johnny's headspace in a way that, like, you don't typically get with a slasher movie.
Oh, yeah.
And so it's like, yeah, part of it is also like the physicality, the way the actor carries himself. But it's like Johnny did nothing wrong. He's just going about his day. It's not his fault that he's annoying.
He's going across his day, and he comes across a group of people telling campfire stories, talking shit on his life. Like,
yeah, they steal his mom's locket.
Necklace.
Yeah, it's not. He does nothing wrong in this movie. He's just leave Johnny alone.
Yeah, I'm really interested in this idea of like, like you said, Chris, you're sort of inherent, because of the perspective of the movie, you're kind of inherently asked to almost empathize with Johnny a little bit. And I, you know, guys, I try to be a good person. I try to think of myself as a good person. But like, honestly, part of me is really sick of being asked to empathize with the worst people on the planet and trying to see the world through their eyes. So like, I understand what you're saying, Chris, but like, you know, conceptually what this movie is doing is putting you in the headspace of a murderer, and it does that thing where it gives him a little bit of a sympathetic backstory. You know, you get that campfire thing, that whole story around the fire where they're talking about what happened to Johnny and the massacre and all that kind of stuff. And it makes you feel for him, but at the same time, I don't know. I just found that to be like a really like an interesting place for me to be mentally watching this movie, is like struggling with how much I should be relating to this character because of the perspective, and then knowing that what he's doing is like objectively terrible, like smashing a guy's head with a rock and like, you know, all these horrible kills and stuff. It's more than just a turn off your brain, oh, gnarly kind of movie that a lot of horror stuff that I've seen is like. So I don't know if anybody,
I do think that's why that final scene is actually kind of important, where the final girl, her name, I'm looking at the IMDb, her name is Chris, the character. She gets picked up by a woman, and the woman tells this story about like how animals will kill. And I do think, like, I don't remember the exact wording of the speech. It goes on for a long time, but mm-hmm. I do feel like that speech sort of like, is not really, it's not like justifying what Johnny did, but it is explaining like his motivation, this sort of like animal instinct to just like tear these people apart, where he doesn't have like an ideology. He's not like, you know, he doesn't have like a like politics. He's just like this animal basically tearing these people limb from limb, and that's all he knows. And but you know, can we talk about the ending? Because I do feel like this is where the movie is going to lose everybody, like this final moment. Because I was like on edge during this entire sequence where they're driving in the car. I was expecting there to be like a twist where this woman was like in league with Johnny or something like that was coming. And it had me like really like anxious, because before we get to that moment, there's this really effective sequence where the character of Chris is running through the woods at night. And it just keeps going on and on. And you're like, you're hearing all the sounds of the woods. And that made me like so goddamn anxious. I was just like, I want her. Like, even though I don't know who this character is, we haven't spent the movie with her, like, that made me empathetic for that character. Like, I really wanted her to get away, because, like, she goes through hell running through these woods. Mm-hmm. And so that entire car sequence had me, like, on edge that, like, there was going to be, like, one final twist that, like, resulted in this character's death. And that's not what happens at all. But it's also a very talky scene after, you know, so much violence. I'm very curious to see how it plays with, like, people and more people see this.
I thought the same thing when, especially when that woman, the driver, stops the car and walks around and says to Chris, like, hey, your leg is bleeding. I have to stop this bleeding before I take you to the hospital. And she like bends down out of frame. I was like, oh man, is she, I had the same thought. Like, is she in league with Johnny? Is this like part of some plan to get her back into the woods or something? Like, what's going on here? And that of course is not how it played out. But BJ, what did you make of the very end?
I really like this ending a lot. I know it plays out a little too long for some people, but I think this is where the movie's sort of emotional manipulation is the strongest, because the whole movie we're seeing like a subversion on tropes that we're very familiar with, everything from like the sheriff giving a big powerful speech when we come into the middle of it, or like the big reveal where it's like the kids have been planning and they've got gasoline and fire and it's like, okay, cool, I got it. And then you get here and you have this person pick you up on the road and you think all the warning bells start going off in your head of like, he's going to come out of the woods, or she's going to be in cahoots, or she's going to bend over to, you know, fix the leg, and Johnny's going to kill her, and now this mm-hmm. girl's going to run again. Like, it plays with you where it's like, I know, like, the movie knows what you're expecting to see and then doesn't give it to you. And that to me feels like the most reminder of like, no, like, this isn't how, like, it's not a movie. Like, this is how things work in real life. This is not a movie. And that then puts everything else that we've seen into like an entirely different context that makes it so much scarier to me.
Yeah.
I don't know if anyone else feels that way, but that's how I walked away from it.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. Yeah.
The thing about the fear, I think that's really well done, because there's that moment where she's like looking out into the woods and, you know, conceptually, theoretically, as we're watching this, we should know in the deep recesses of our mind that there's no way that Johnny, who has moved at, you know, 0.5 miles an hour this entire movie, would be able to make up the ground that they've made in this very long car ride and just like suddenly appear right there, right? But like, because this is a movie, anything could happen. And because there's, you know, the movie begins with Johnny being resurrected and like digging his way out of his own grave, that like, the game is the rules of the game have changed a little bit, but yeah, I feel like, oh, sorry. I was just going to say real quick that like that feeling of her looking out into the woods delivered this, that was kind of one of the scariest things in the movie to me, like more than the gore and all that kind of stuff, because it's like a twisted reaction I'm having, but like, I kind of love the way that this movie was able to conjure that feeling of, this unstoppable force is still out there, and Chris will probably never be able to sleep again because she escaped, but she knows that Johnny's not taken care of. And so there's this sort of haunted quality to the very end of this movie that I thought worked really well. But go ahead, Chris.
Absolutely. I also like the movie kind of ends with on a joke where there's that slow pan, and it shows that he just took the locket back, and that's probably why he stopped chasing her. Because earlier there's that scene where Chris and the guy, I forget the guy's name, they're talking to the the ranger, and you overhear him talking about the locket, and she's like, I'll just give it back. And he's like, you can't just give it back. But yeah. that final moment suggests that if they had just given it back, that actually probably would have just like ended the entire blood, like the entire massacre.
Yeah. Does he just crawl back into his own grave after
that? Yes, with the locket. But I just love that moment where it pans across and it's like, well, the locket's gone. And he's probably like back in his moldy grave again. And I just thought that was like such a nice little, I also love that. God, the funniest kill in the whole movie for me is at the end where they're trying to eat, like they have the bear trap and they have the gaslight, and you can tell they're trying to set a trap for Johnny, and the guy is behind him and he's like, come on, what are you waiting? And then like he just gets hit in the face. Yes. With the, and this just happens over and over and over, and then she just like slowly backs away like the Homer Simpson meme.
Yep.
That had me like just, oh my God.
I had that same thing written down as being like so darkly funny because of how just immediate the kill is. Like he, you know, he has this bluster and bravado and just immediately gets taken down. And then the movie very quickly becomes no longer funny because Johnny is just like continually hacking away at the viscera where that character's head used to be. Like for so long, he just seems like so unusually pissed off at this one random guy for some reason. But man, yeah, that was super effective.
But yeah, I do think the movie in general is funny. Like it's intentionally, like there's a lot of moments that had me laughing. I don't think it was just the edibles. I do think it's like intentionally a funny movie at times. Like, I don't know. It just like, it really impressed me with the way it juggles tones.
BJ, do you have any other moments from the film that stood out to you that you wanted to mention here?
I love whenever he comes into frame into something that is a trope. Like that sheriff speech wrecked me. I was cackling out loud because you get into the middle of it and he's being so powerful, like, you know, my daddy put you in the ground once, I'm gonna do it again. Like, I couldn't handle it. I just thought it was so funny. Those are my favorite moments of the movie by far.
Excellent. Okay, well, I think let's take a quick break and then we'll get into your interview with Chris Nash.
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/redcircle.
How do people feel about getting Big Fitness Energy at Planet Fitness for $15 a month? They feel as thrilled as a kid the first summer they're tall enough to ride the roller coaster. That's right. When you join Planet Fitness right now, you get access to tons of equipment and free fitness training in a clean and spacious club. Don't wait. Join the judgment-free zone today for that all-day energy. Download the free Planet Fitness app and join today for $15 a month.
Hurry. Deal ends September 12th. Join today for $15 a month.
See Home Club for details.
All right. Anything we need to know about this interview before we let folks hear it, BJ?
No. Chris gave me all the answers that I wanted, which was really exciting. And I think people are going to be shocked, especially if they've seen this movie and how intense it is, that he's so normal, which I just really like.
Excellent. All right. Well, here is BJ's conversation with writer-director Chris Nash.
I was fortunate enough to see In a Violent Nature at the Overlook Film Festival, and it was with such a responsive crowd, which I loved. And I had so many questions for you during the Q&A, but, you know, it was kind of an in and out situation. So I'm very happy to be able to talk to you at this point. So my first question for you is, this movie obviously is pulling from a lot of the slasher influences that we would see in films like Friday the 13th. So I'm curious why you elected to go with the outdoors woods slasher instead of, say, you know, Michael Myers in Suburbia or Billy in a sorority house attic.
Well, for it being my first feature and trying to like get something together, that like there's just the logistical aspect of, you know, if we're out in the woods are everywhere. I can find woods, I'm sure of it. And also a lot less background noise, like whether it's other characters like in a fraternity or anything like that. Like they're all things that you have to consider as far as like, we got to cast these people, we got to have these people sit, like, and as interesting as I think that would be to even use these same aesthetics like in a much more hustle and bustle setting, I think it would have been a technical nightmare for me at that point in time.
Absolutely. You know,
give it a couple of years, maybe, but first time out, no.
And yeah, I mean, and on that same note, you know, this is also people that are in the woods, but this is also very specifically not a summer camp the way that Friday the 13th or Sleepaway Camp is. Was there ever a version of In a Violent Nature that was a true to form summer camp, or was it always people just hanging out in the woods?
It was always just people hanging out in the woods. Yeah. Just a group of folks at a cabin. It's kind of like all I had in mind. Once again, also just, this is the most boring answer, but it's just logistical things. the thought of having to deal with the whole camp, it's way too much. Yeah.
But I think that that's very valuable information to share, because, you know, it's gotten in some ways easier to make films than it ever has been, because there's always the, you could just make it on your phone sort of mindset, but it's still very difficult. And there is a lot of logistics that you have to keep in mind, like, where are you going to shoot? What resources do you have? What access do you have? And at Overlook, you spoke about how a majority of this movie had to be reshot. And I in no way could ever recall that story the way that you did. So I'm curious if you could speak now to what that was like on your first feature, to have to reshoot so much of it.
I didn't have to reshoot it. I coerced my producers into allowing me to reshoot it. It was really tough. It was definitely a very difficult thing to even have to go to my producers, who were two of my best friends. We've known each other for 15, 20 years. And we worked, it was so difficult that first 4 weeks of principal photography that we ended up reshooting. It was a huge ordeal for us. Whether it was just weather problems, or we had our main actor who played Johnny, he actually had to leave halfway through due to a medical issue, and we had to recast on the fly. But we had to have other people step into the role before we actually could find somebody to recast. So there's like, I think probably grand total like 5 or 6 people playing Johnny during that first block of shooting that we tried to do. And there were just other issues that, like, I naively wrote a dog into the film.
The cardinal sin.
Oh, I know. But it's
fire, water, kids, and dogs. What are you thinking?
Oh, I know. And the water, too. It was like there was a scene at a lake that was much more needlessly complicated the first time we tried shooting it. It was just very difficult to go to them and asked to go through all of this over again in the hopes of getting something that we feel is more in tone with what we were setting out to achieve, because so much of the movie is tone. Like, it really is just kind of a vibe. It's a tone piece more than anything. So it was really important to us to do that. And so having less than half of the crew we originally went at it with, a lot of the cast came back. The majority of the cast came back, which was great. Because that's also saved money on prosthetics, because we didn't have to redo prosthetics that we had originally. But I think we're all very happy that we put ourselves through that. Because also it's the kind of draw that you forget as soon as you're done. And then once we start making another movie, we'll be like, oh yeah, this is... We forgot all about this.
And I think that it was the right call, because the final product is, you know, it's a truly remarkable piece. And I love that you brought up that it's such a tone piece, because on the subject of the tone, there is such a deliberate pacing to this film, especially with Johnny walking through the woods. So for you, how did you know when, like, yes, this is the moment to cut? Is this something that you just felt innately? Did you time it with a stopwatch? How did you determine how long we're going to follow him walking around?
That was something that my editor, Alex Jacobs, and I just kind of, it was definitely like a feeling. Like, you know, we were not cutting against anything. We're not cutting back and forth with dialogue. It's all just like snippets of walking and just kind of tableaus. So it is a question of like how long, it was an interesting question of how long do we actually sit with these? And it really was just us sitting there going like, I feel like now's enough. I feel like that's enough steps. And there's been obvious acknowledgement that there's a lot of walking in this movie. There's just a lot, but trying to decide like how much is too much, but how little is too little was a kind of interesting thing for us too. Because if you have a shot where it's just like three steps, then you're not feeling any of the environment. You're kind of just focusing on the action. And it was a lot of how long do we have to sit in a shot in order to feel the environment and not just take this as action that we're supposed to be watching. And as soon as we had that, as soon as we felt that feeling of like the place that we were in, then we tried to cut out of it, but always trying to communicate the atmosphere and the environment first.
Yeah, it's definitely a very delicate dance to do. But I think after a certain point, like your brain also starts playing tricks on you, because I'd be following him for so long and I'd be sitting there trying to figure out, is someone going to run in front of him and not know he's there? Or how far away is he going to be creeping up on somebody? So your brain also starts to do a little bit of that legwork. So I think you paced it really well in terms of walking around it. You know, I think it did the job. But then when we do get to our kids hanging out in the woods and they all meet increasingly grisly ends, and a couple of these kills are, you know, there's reports of people barfing watching it. Where did the kills come from? Where is this sick part of your brain coming up with these ideas?
I don't know exactly, other than they're a lot more technically inspired than like viscerally inspired. Our lead prosthetics person on the film, Steve Kostanski, is a director as well. I'm actually like doing prosthetics on his Deathstalker remake right now, taking a break from that. But we work on each other's movies and we're both prosthetics people, him more so than I. But we're trying to figure out just things we hadn't seen before, or seeing effects done in a way that we hadn't seen before. So the one that's been getting a lot of reaction was just, it was more of just a challenge of like, how nasty can I get with this? Mm-hmm. And how long can I take this? And there's another one near the end of the film, which is all taken from like a locked off shot. And we get to see a character just slowly meet their demise. And the inspiration for that was just like, okay, well, how do we do this? How do we do something like that in a locked off shot? Not necessarily like what's the nastiest thing possible, but like, how can we make a locked off shot where we don't really cut away, or we at least hide our cutaways, but do something we haven't seen before? That was really important to me. Not so much trying to be mean and like snickering behind the camera going, oh, I'm going to make people feel so horrible, but more just entertaining myself on a technical level of like, how do we build these things?
Oh, beautiful. And that kill in particular, I think for me, at least, and some of the folks I was sitting with at Overlook, because it goes on for so long, it turns the corner of like, wow, this is really disgusting, into like, this is really entertaining to watch, because you then start to think about the logistics of every slasher movie you've ever seen, of how did they end up in this position? And you are, you know, you're literally showing us how the sausage is made, so to speak, or I guess, you know, the logs are diced, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
I think that you did a very, very good job with it. So for you, seeing this film with so many different audiences and hearing so many different reactions, because there are the people who scream and gasp and allegedly barf, but then there's also the people with the unsettling laughter. How does that feel for you as a director to be in those spaces and hear all of these different reactions?
It's really flattering. It's interesting to be able to make something that has a physical effect on people. It seems like, there's sometimes where you know, being in the genre space, you watch these movies with an audience, and sometimes it seems really put on. Sometimes you're there in the audience, just watching the movie, and then a kill happens, and then somebody will be like, "This is where we cheer now, right? This is this is where I get to show my cred and make a lot of noise because I love this shit." So I'm always have my ear out for that, but to see whether or not this is actually an authentic reaction. And I think, as much as I don't believe the vomiting, like, vomiting's pretty authentic. You can't really control that. But it seems like people are, it is really, these scenes and these deaths are really having an effect on the audience in a uncontrollable way. So whether they're laughing or gasping, it's all good to me.
Beautiful. And so a lot of the discussion around this has been, you know, this is, you know, from the perspective of the killer, but technically it's not a POV movie. We're following, you know, our killer. I guess you could almost say maybe it's like an observational, like Nat Geo documentary about a killer. So I'm curious how you feel about so many people viewing this as like from the perspective of, when it's more of a follow movie.
Yeah, I think it, because we think it's like, oh, it's from their perspective too, but I feel like Johnny is kind of like, it is his perspective, but he's kind of a thoughtless killing machine. Like, one of our big inspirations was Gerald Cargill's Angst, which is essentially kind of the same thing. We're following a murderer as he just spends his day, you know, doing his work. But that movie is entirely accompanied by a narration of all of his inner thoughts. And ours was not that. Ours actually, you know what? Ours was accompanied by a narration of all of his inner thoughts. There's just nothing there. He just, he's just doing his job. So in a way, like, I do feel like it is kind of his perspective insofar as, his perspective is very simple, and his perspective is almost like objective. Like, he is just a tool walking through the world doing like hammer and nails, and that's it. I do, you know, obviously, like, when you say that though, it does bring to mind like POV. And so I know that there's a lot of people thinking that this is just like a first person POV movie when it's clearly not. And then they feel then they feel lied to, which is, you know, it's fine. As long as they're feeling something.
Yeah, there are definitely moments where I feel like such a voyeur, like I'm seeing things of this killer that I'm not supposed to, especially like when he finds his little car and he's playing with it. I'm like, I don't feel like I'm supposed to see this. And now I'm seeing it, but you know what? That's part of it. And it makes it like, I get become like weirdly empathetic to this, you know, killing machine, which is not something I thought I would ever feel towards one of our slashers, but you know, that's kind of what it is. But my last question for you, as we kind of wrap up, is, you know, I think in the early days of slasher films, it very much became, you know, they were intending to scare the audience and show these people with the quest for survival. And then at a certain point, it stopped being about that. And it started being about how awesome it is to watch these people just obliterate a bunch of, you know, unsuspecting deeds. So I'm curious, what are your feelings about why you like slashers?
Like slashers, well, when I was younger, it was the taboo of it. It was, you know, I'm 7 years old, I'm gonna see some creepy murders and maybe some boobs, and this is like what I'm feeling like I really need to do right now. As I got more involved in film and like special effects, I just enjoyed like the artistry of the kills. And like the fancifulness of it, because I'm not as invested into the actual storyline anymore. And when I can be invested into the storyline, man, I love it. But I'm more watching it from a technical point of view. But I would agree that the there was a turn where now, I know like torture porn had its moment in time, mm-hmm. but now it's kind of like everything is torture porn. Now it's just we're just waiting to see these kills. And that was a big part of the thesis of the film too. It's just like, okay, well, this is kind of what these movies are now. They are just we're just waiting to see kills. So now I'm just going to make something where we're taking our time, and I'll give you what you want. But that's what it is. And this is kind of allowing the audience to acknowledge like what they came to see. But then at the end, bringing it back into a survivor story, because it is very mm-hmm. much like that the last 20 minutes for me are definitely like what the movie's all about.
Absolutely. I mean, if anything, this movie, it's almost like it's somewhat of an exercise of how long are you willing to wait to get the goods and get the kill? Like, are you patient yeah. enough? It's an exercise of patience, which I think is lovely. But, you know, that's the time that I have with you today. Thank you so much for chatting with me, and congratulations on such a great film. I can't wait for more people to, you know, get their eyes on it and be terrorized by it.
Thanks so much, BJ. Really appreciate it.
You're very welcome.
All right, and then to end this episode, this is the last 5-star review that I'm going to read for now. I might put the call out and ask for more help from listeners again in the future, but thank you to everybody who has written in, and I think this is a good one to end on for the time being. So Howard McKean from Columbus, Ohio says, I've been a listener for years and certainly miss the old cast with Peter, Jacob, HT, Ben, Brad, and Chris all together every week. Now, with the changing of the guard, I still love this pod even more. I look forward every Monday to hearing my new favorite movie writer, Ryan Scott, analyze the box office statistics. I truly appreciate Ben's love and celebration of inclusiveness, diversity, and acceptance. I think he's become such a wonderful, consistent host of this pod. I really enjoy BJ's interviews and the wonderful, thoughtful, and incisive questions that she asks of producers, writers, directors, and actors. I love hearing Jacob become so enthusiastic that he barely breathes while talking in a run-on sentence about his favorite new books or games. I'm always down to hear about whatever newest snacks that Brad is consuming. And of course, I would be remiss if I did not shout out my favorite reviewer, Mr. Chris Evangelista, and his witty words, highlighted by his cigarette-tinged smoker's voice. thank you, Slash Film, for all the info, reviews, opinions, and chatter from years past, now, and whatever is downloading soon. So thank you so much for that review, and thank you all again for the folks who have been leaving those 5-star reviews to sort of help us game the algorithm and put us in front of new listeners. So I'm not going to be reading those 5-star reviews on the show again for the time being, but like I said, maybe I'll open that back up or something. But thank you all, and thank you all for listening to this episode. You can find BJ's review of In a Violent Nature, and we may have a couple more articles up about the movie at slashfilm.com, so check that out. Slash Film Daily is published every weekday, bringing you the most exciting news from the world of movies and TV, as well as deeper dives into the great features you can find on the site. You can subscribe to the show on Apple, Overcast, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Send your feedback, questions, comments, concerns, and mailbag topics to us at bpearson@slashfilm.com. Make sure to leave your name and general geographic location in case we mention your email on the air. Don't forget to take a minute to rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. That really does help us out a lot. Tell your friends about the show any way you can. Thank you so much for listening, and we will talk to you all next week.
How do people feel about getting Big Fitness Energy at Planet Fitness for $15 a month? They feel as thrilled as a kid the first summer they're tall enough to ride the roller coaster. That's right. When you join Planet Fitness right now, you get access to tons of equipment and free fitness training in a clean and spacious club. Don't wait. Join the judgment-free zone today for that all-day energy. Download the free Planet Fitness app and join today for $15 a month.
Hurry. Deal ends September 12th. Join today for $15 a month.
See Home Club for details.
Want a website with unmatched power, speed, and control? Try Bluehost Cloud, the new web hosting plan from Bluehost, built for WordPress creators by WordPress experts. With 100% uptime, incredible load times, and 24/7 WordPress priority support, your sites will be lightning fast with global reach. And with Bluehost Cloud, your sites can handle surges in traffic no matter how big. Plus, you automatically get daily backups and world-class security. Get started now at Bluehost.com.